Hello.
All right, I think we're in business.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi,
I
can
can
you hear
hear
me?
you. Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello.
Just call me
Hello.
Bill Bulmer.
Yeah. He's getting good, though.
I know I had every intention on getting here right on time, and then before I knew it was 5 minutes. It was 10:25. I ran downstairs and made coffee, and I was already late.
Yep, you're doing a Bill Bulmer. Except your mic works right away.
I guess.
I had to do some testing because Skype updated and then it wasn't working and then but it appears to be working. So
Stupid
in the
Skype.
future, we should download a MP3 recorder for you, Rob, just so you can have so we could have redundancy.
What is that?
I'll send you a link.
What is
All right.
redundancy?
What is
Yeah.
redundancy?
What's redundancy? Are
It's
you
so
is that
I'm
did
not
you just call me a stupid a stupid? Is that what that
the stupid.
You're a stupid.
Yeah.
It's a recorder.
All right, that's fine.
So we could have redundancy.
Yeah.
So I'm not a single
So we
point
can
of failure
we can
like
all be stupid.
with Bomer. I'm a single point of failure 'cause
Really?
his 8-track recorder doesn't cut it.
That's too bad.
Looks
All
like I'm
right.
recording now. I had to update my version that I had, but now it looks like it's recording.
Good.
So
So we should be
we
all
have
right.
some redundancy, but we need to increase our redundancy
That's fine.
in the future.
So on Thursday I got my new Teen Titans number 2 in the mail.
Yeah,
I
I
was very
saw that.
excited about that. Chris, can you believe that? I got that one.
I can believe it.
You do?
Whoa, I just turned up the volume really high.
He believes it so much, he wants to hear it
It
in the
was
whole
like,
house. The whole house can hear
you do. That's what I
it.
heard. You do. Like, oh my God. Yeah, I sort of forgot to get back to you about mine, but
Yeah, I said the hell with you.
yeah.
What were you
Actually,
supposed to get
I
back
forgot
to
we
him
had a
about?
conversation.
Well, I was thinking about selling it, but I think my reluctance
Came from
Mabel
Mabel.
was upset about
Mabel said,
she was
"What are
upset
you
about the
doing?"
idea. Yeah.
Yep,
And
definitely so.
it's tempting because I don't own that many comics that are worth money, and both that and DC Comics Presents 26 have increased in value a lot from when I got them.
Sure.
So it's tempting to make money on them, but on the other hand, the reason I have those two comics is because they're among the few
That have
comics that are
value.
worth that. Yeah, well, they're among the few that have value that I have any, that I care at all to own, you know? So.
Well, here's the thing. Unless, I mean, did you need money for something?
No.
Right, so there's
Apart
really no
from,
reason to sell it, you know?
yeah.
There's no reason to sell anything unless you need it.
Exactly.
I mean, if there's a reason for it, you either need money or you need space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those would drive. Or if you want to make money and you have it in some other form, like you don't care anymore about it being a collectible and you already have the omnibus or the trade paperbacks or
Yeah, I
digital.
suppose.
And
Now, what if you have duplicates of the same issue and someone else you know needs that issue? Should you sell it then?
I think so.
Yeah.
Especially if it's somebody that you care about and you want to give them a good deal instead of them getting through the ringer, like you're
All
doing for
right.
me.
That's right. That's right. And you
So,
still get spent to you gave me too much money. I still owe you $20.
no. We're good.
Yeah.
If you have more than one copy, that's redundancy.
It is.
Yeah,
so maybe I should have kept that redundancy.
Gotta do the electric company thing. Redundancy. Except you only have two people. You can't do that word. You can't do that word in an electric company. It's too big.
Yep.
But yeah, Rob is giving me a copy of the first Bullseye. So he saw that I think I said on Weekly Reads or something.
Yeah, it was either that or a Geek Brunch with Bill. I don't remember which.
Yeah, that I was closing in on having the full Daredevil run and missing the Bullseye issue. It turns out I'm missing a few more. I'm missing two annuals and three more comics. But I added them to my mycomicshop.order, and they'll probably be gone when I place the order. But that's what happened the last time is I tend to, like, wait a month or two before. I mean, if I could order a My Comic Shop every day, I would, but I tend to queue them up and then send the order and then claim victory before I actually entered them into the database. I knew I was missing the two annuals.
Yeah.
And I knew I was missing the Bullseye.
It's crazy to me that you were missing, that you happened to be missing that issue, which is obviously a key issue, and that I just happen to have two of those.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
I'm pretty sure I have two first Moon Knights, and I know Martin's looking for it. I just got to find them.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I have two. But one of them's not in great shape. One of them is in really good shape.
Martin's been a big spender lately.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed.
Maybe buying he got a bonus at work or something.
Is fun. I mean, especially when you're locking in on either completing a run or a first appearance.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm going for the first Punisher. I think at Heroes or Baltimore, depending on which one I go to this year.
Mike, I have that one too, but I don't think I have two of them.
Yeah. I'm going to grab that one. But I have a giant size X-Men. But you do too, don't you?
I do. I have a giant size man thing, but I don't like to brag about it.
Yeah. I don't. I don't have a giant size man.
No, I don't really have a giant size man thing comic book.
Oh, it's something else, yeah.
Right. I've got giant size X-Men number one, though. And number two.
Mike, are you maybe only going to one convention again this year?
Yeah, Micah's visiting us this year. It's been a real pleasant, because you guys visited us last year, and now Micah and Claire are visiting us this year.
Nice.
So, work is crazy, and I can't really, I could barely take off to go to the doctor, so I just...
Yeah,
I'll have to see, but I'm planning on going to here. I want to go to Heroes more than Baltimore, so.
That's what you're leaning towards.
Yeah, we're leaning towards that.
Okay, well, definitely keep in touch with me because I want to try to go to one this year, and I probably can't do both. So I definitely want to go to whatever one you go to if it's possible.
Yeah.
Well, one of these days, I will go to that too, but it's. I keep saying that, but like this year we're going to Disney with the kids, so it's like that's sucking up all
Disney
of our money.
Disney World?
Disney World, yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, next month.
It's not as fun
yeah.
as Universal.
Not next month, April.
It's not, Universal's way more fun for an adult, I think.
Yeah, but not for the kids.
But you know what is great is that one roller coaster at the Animal Kingdom. Oh my God, that's great.
The Everest one?
I think it's the Everest one.
The Yeti? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
They've changed that one. They used to have the I forget what they used to call it, the monor. I can't remember what they used to call it in a giant white mountain. Well, this one is really good. This one has a lot of cool stuff. They moved the Yeti into that too. So I think
yeah, they got like Avatar stuff now too that I've never seen. So that's going to be interesting.
But as far as like. like adult type rides. Oh my God, Universal has it going, man.
Me
It's
and my
just one of
wife
the
have
it's one of
always
those
been.
parks that you're like, is there gonna be enough for the kids kind of thing, you know? Like if you have kids, it's kind of questionable because they have some small rides, but it's more catered to like teenager and above, in my
I
opinion.
agree. I totally agree. Yeah, we're not even going there at all. We're going to be staying at, at a Disney resort, and then we're just going to
Yeah.
be doing the Disney stuff every day.
Very cool. Are
Look
you going to
forward
be
to
there a week?
it. Yeah, I think we've got, yeah, we'll be there for like 6 days. Like we have tickets for 5 days.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
I want to do it again. I mean, last time we went, we had a blast, so I want to do it again. Except I want to stay at Universal if I. Last was a family vacation with everybody. If we me and Barb do it, we're staying at Universal.
That'll be nice.
Yeah. It's a good time. If you like amusement parks. If you don't
Yeah.
like a lot of people in amusement parks, then it's not too fun.
It's going to be interesting with the kids because, they're going to be five. And
We always
I
buy
th
those
it's going to be long
speed
days.
passes, and those are nice if you have
Yeah.
them,
Yeah,
because
we're
then
doing the same.
you just go to the front, especially at like Universal. Except they have like some rides that you can't do it on that are new. They don't let you.
Yeah.
Like last time, it was one of the Harry Potter things, so we waited forever. But they have butter beer.
Yes,
Have you ever had butter beer?
that was
Oh
awesome.
my God! I don't. That's not really alcoholic beer, but it is so good. I mean, like I love butterbeer. If I could buy a six pack of butterbeer at my,
I'm with you.
I
Because
would
it's like a
have,
butterscotch flavor, and I love that.
I would have butterbeer in my fridge every week. Like that's what I'd want to drink, 'cause I fell in love in Harry Potter land with butterbeer.
Yeah, awesome.
That's good.
Yeah,
Well, we want to keep on tap here, and I had one comic that I picked because it's in my Clone Saga, and I thought it was a number one issue, so it'd be an okay one for you guys to jump on, and it was Spider-Man Funeral for an Octopus, and I have been enjoying this Clone Saga quite a bit because I see elements of Superior Spider-Man in this thing. And it's kind of fun to go back and read this after seeing Doc Ock as Spider-Man. The Vulture had poisoned Spider-Man with a venom, and he was dying. And Doc Ock pretty much saved his life and then died for it. So this is like the aftermath of that. And the other thing that's interesting is you have a big time editor writing it. It's a Tom Brevoort is the writer. I wonder if he's like the he like scripted it, and then this Mike, I never even heard of his name, Cantor-Rowan or something like that,
Yeah, me neither.
wrote the words. And then the breakdowns, I don't even know the guy either, Stuart Johnson.
I looked it up. I'm like,
I
I don't know
do
who
know
that is.
Al Milgrom,
Yeah.
so the two names I know of are Tom Brevoort, mostly because he's on social media, usually pissing off people. But I also know Al Milgrom. So this was a three-part issue, and it deals with the aftermath of Doc Ock dying, Peter feeling guilt for him dying. Mary Jane is pregnant. This is the part of Spider-Man I don't know, and
She didn't look pregnant to me.
I had no idea she was even pregnant in history.
Yeah, I remember that.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't read this mini at the time, but I was current, I had read Spider-Man all the way through, so I remember her being pregnant.
Oh, so you never quit Spider-Man.
No.
Okay, yeah, she was pregnant in the Clone Saga way before. If you remember, Aunt May was deadly ill, like she's dying.
Yeah.
She's in the hospital, sort of in a coma, And Mary Jane went to go visit her father and sister. And it was during that time she found out she was pregnant. And her father and her didn't get along, but I guess she made peace with her sister and her father and then came back and then told Peter, hey, I'm pregnant. And Peter's like, oh, shit, at the time because I'm dying. And he didn't want to tell Mary Jane, hey, I'm dying. I'm going to be dead in a couple of days because he was in bad shape.
Yeah. Good luck with the kid.
Yeah, Doc Ock saved him. The other thing that they introduced really cool is that Doc Ock had a lover, and she was like this big Amazonian woman that was super strong.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, she was pretty fascinating, and I did some research to see if she existed beyond this, and she really didn't. I mean, I think she had like one other appearance, and it's a shame because she was an interesting character because she loved Doc Ock, but she like men made her angry, like just a typical man. She just wanted to like break him apart.
Can you refresh my memory if you remember? But I don't remember. Why did Doc Ock save Peter's life, Spider-Man's life?
It was kind of like that relationship with the Joker and Batman.
Oh, okay.
Do you know, like, it's like.
He doesn't want somebody else taking
him out. I
want
to be the one to destroy you. I respect you. I can't have the Vulture do it, this little jackass. It's got to be me. So, and at the time, he was, I don't know, he was feeling like really sympathetic towards him. I don't know why. It was kind of bizarre.
Okay.
But he did save him, which is cool. And this is the aftermath of that, and it deals with his cousin. This is a cool relationship, too, because his cousin inherits everything. And he doesn't even really like Doc. He doesn't like Doc Ock. And he gets all his technology and everything, minus the arms, and he needs to seek out the help from the Sinister Six to retrieve the arms. And it's almost like the Sinister Four. So it's Electro, Hobgoblin, Vulture, and who's the other one?
Vulture. I can't remember. Electro. Mysterio. You said Electro. Mysterio.
Mysterio.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
Chris for the win.
So he hires them to go get the arms and some technology, and they run into the Scarlet Spider more so the Vulture does, and the Scarlet Spider throws a tracer on him and tracks him back down to the fortress, and that's kind of where this issue kind of led off. So what did you guys think about it?
Chris, you can go first.
I thought it was better than I thought it was going to be. I'm a little wary when it comes to the whole Clone Saga era, because of just the convolutedness of everything going on. And it was after I quit reading comics, and Spider-Man was my favorite, and I was just hear the rumors about stuff that happened after I stopped reading, and all of it sounded bad and confusing and dumb. And but you know, I definitely see a lot of Al Milgrom, even though he just did the finishes. I thought it looked like Al Milgrom work, and Brie Vor's writing, it didn't feel as 90s stereotypical as one might expect, despite the presence of Scarlet Spider and stuff.
And his sweatshirt.
Yeah. That silly kind of costume and stuff, but and it wasn't as confusing as I thought it might be. I mean, even though it's a number one, it's kind of like a spin-off special of the whole Clone Saga event, you know? Mm-hmm. There were some things that, obviously, they didn't fill in all the details, and there were things you kind of had to infer, but they did give you enough, I think, to have an idea of what was going on, because I still haven't read any of the Clone Saga stuff. Anything I know is just from in passing, from reading articles and just people discussing it on podcasts and stuff. So So yeah, it was more readable than I expected. I thought it might be a little challenging to get into. Rob, you can share some thoughts. I'll think if I have anything else to say beyond.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how you started, because I would agree. You know, like we were talking, I was reading all the way through Spider-Man, and even, you know, as it got relaunched as a number one. So I was reading all the way through these, you know, old legacy issues. But I didn't buy this three-part miniseries. I can only guess that as the Clone Saga went on and on, I felt like I was done with it. I was never a Scarlet Spider fan. So at the time, I never picked up that miniseries. So when I read this, I wasn't expecting a whole lot, but I agree with you, Chris. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed how this was, you know, linking to the larger narrative. And even though I haven't read the Clone Saga since it originally came out, I was able to get right into this. And, you know, I thought this first issue was really, really well done. I enjoyed seeing the, you know, the four members of the Secret Six with Vulture had, I don't remember how it had happened, but he de-aged, and, you know, Hobgoblin was a newer member of the Secrets or the Sinister Six. And it was nice just seeing, I could kind of feel like this was kind of towards the end of, before they started relaunching all of their books, when they started that cycle of new number ones, you know, over and over. But yeah, I thought that this was a real solid first issue, and I actually am tempted to, because I think it's only three issues, Mike, is that right?
Yeah, it's only three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm actually tempted to go ahead and download the other two issues and see how this ends up, because I thought this was a real strong start.
The one thing I like the way I'm reading it is it seems like this issue came out before some other stuff happened, but the omnibus puts it in the order that you should read it instead mm-hmm. of the order that it was printed.
Yeah, so, that's what it seemed, so just like from some of that.
The experience that I'm experiencing is so much different than everybody that was reading it off the shelf. Like, it flows really naturally well. Like, I'm enjoying it. And I'm on page 678 of this 1,000-page omnibus. And one of my goals is to finish it this year. I only had a few New Year's resolutions is to finish this omnibus and finish my Daredevil. But I have volume 2 to jump into too, which is another honking 1,000-page book.
Jeez.
But
you know, it's funny that you say that.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mike. No, go ahead.
I'm just surprised how much I'm enjoying it. Like, I didn't expect to. It's a total blind spot in my reading, and it's caused me to go buy the issues that I'm reading, because I didn't own them, obviously. So it's weird, because the collector mentality says I have to have the singles too. So when I read something that I really like via an omnibus or something that's on Marvel Unlimited, I tend to seek out the individual issue as well. Like, I'm doing that with Howard the Duck and Adventures into Fear as well, because of my enjoyment of Steve Gerber. But this has been a surprise. Like, I know people have told me this is a bad spot in comics, and I never listen to anybody, because I'm my own individual self, and I tend to like things that people say I'm not supposed to like. And I tend to not like things that people say I'm supposed to like. So I, as far as recommendations, I kind of do my own thing. I don't listen to people. I sometimes listen to people's emotion on a podcast if they're real passionate about something, and I haven't read it, I'll check it out. But if everything else, I'd like to experience. I like to read every comic book if it was up to me. If I could be like the Watcher and live forever and just sit there and read comics, that would be great. But yeah, this has been this whole Clone Saga to me is a blind spot, and I have picked up a bunch of spectaculars and amazing to fill in, and I am gonna buy this Spider-Man for an funeral for an octopus because I enjoyed it. The art is even. I'm surprised how much I like the art in this issue. I don't know if it's just the presentation in the omnibus. It just seems larger than life and very colorful and sort of 90s, but not. It's got like you said, the Al Milgram. It looks like his artwork, and Spidey has those great poses, like when he's spinning and stuff like that. It looks like McFarlane in some of it, just his poses.
Really, some of it reminded me of his face and stuff. Actually, reminded me of Larson a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, Eric Larson.
But the only what I was gonna say is that you reminded me that this didn't necessarily come out in the exact order of when it occurred in the story. It sounds like from some of the little notes that it came out after. Some of the stuff was resolved, and so that actually might be another reason why I chose not to pick it up at the time, where I was like, well, this is already done, this is over with, I don't need to revisit. But this was, like I said, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good first issue. So
yeah, I'm real interested to see a lot of the plot threads too. I love when one of the reasons I love Tom DeFalco so much is because he seems to always have three plot threads in every book. And I love that. I love that type of storytelling. Like, one is towards completion, one is in the middle, and one's just starting. I love that type of storytelling. And a lot of this storytelling in the omnibus is sort of like that. You have many different threads and in different times. Like, I prefer that so much more to the typical storytelling today, which is pretty much a single thread in like a six-issue arc.
Yeah,
100%.
I feel that this drives you to want to keep reading because one's in the middle, one's in the beginning, and one's ending.
You feel like you're reading an entire long narrative. I mean, honestly, it's like a soap opera. Like, there's always something going on. You know, it continues, right?
Because or just any kind of, it's a classic approach to serialized entertainment, you know?
Yeah. Oh, but absolutely.
TV or comics or anything that's supposed to just keep going, and it's a good way to keep people's interest, you know?
Whereas, like you said, Mike, a lot of the storytelling these days are it's very structured into for the trade, right? So whether it's a 4-issue trade or 6-issue trade. I will say that's one of the things that I liked about when DC launched Rebirth is that you might have a 4-issue arc, you might have an 8-issue arc, you might have a 1-shot story. They've been changing it up a lot more in the DC Rebirth than they were prior, and especially, like, I think Valiant's a big offender of it's always got to be like 4-issue arcs over and over again.
Yeah,
and that gets tiring sometimes.
Well, yeah, I think we are moving away from it somewhat, just because we're long out of that era of trades. I think, well, not long out of it, but I think as time goes on, I think the prevalence of digital will influence things to move a little bit away from the 6-issue arc, as people are not as trade oriented and print oriented.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about like DC winning the market share, and I find it interesting because I think they are winning the print market share that goes to distributors, but I don't really think they're winning because Marvel has that unlimited, and I would love to know how many people are subscribed to that. And if you have 1 million subscribers at like $6 to $9 a month, depending on what you're paying, that's a lot of freaking money, man. and then reprinting old issues. So it would be very interesting if DC ever gets into that world, like what it will do, because DC and Marvel drive the market. They drive it. They always have. They always will. And it'll be really interesting to see if they go DC Unlimited.
I just don't know why they haven't already. I mean, how long has Marvel Unlimited been around now?
Oh, a really long time. I mean, I remember it predates iPads and tablets and stuff mm-hmm. being popular, because I remember the first time I subscribed to it, the tablets were not a thing. I mean, the only option was to read on your computer, and I used to sit there at a desktop and read comics.
Yeah.
Which is not the most comfortable way to read comics, but it was, at the same time, I was willing to do it because it was amazing to have access to so many.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish that, I mean, DC, they have such a big back catalog, too. That would be amazing.
It would be.
Yeah. I don't know how much it factors in.
So much is not available on Comixology, even. Like, there's so much missing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and if they did start something off, that stuff would probably be missing from their service as well, because they'd probably started off with stuff that's already been scanned.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I wonder how much of it plays into the fact that Marvel did start this up so long ago. So, you know, they've just maintained and updated the infrastructure and interface, you know, adapted it to iPads. I mean, there was a long period of time where tablets were around, but Marvel App Unlimited didn't have an app yet, and then when it did get an app, it was like a huge deal and everyone was super excited, and it totally increased the value of it. But I wonder, you know, they didn't have to pay that. They had already paid that startup cost to get the ball rolling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if DC ever did jump in, they'd have to first pay that startup cost to get it all set up. And
it's a lot of money up front, but if they get it's monthly income that is kind of flatlined unless people start dropping off. Like it would be interesting to look at some pie charts to see if there's growth in that area. At least for me, because I'm always interested in sales and stuff. But I think that when Marvel relaunches a new series or a renumbered new number one, it gives more people the opportunity to say, why don't I just go to Marvel Unlimited and just wait 6 months, and then I have everything that came out that month? Because
mm-hmm.
it makes perfect sense. I mean, it makes logical sense, and it saves you. I mean, if you read four comics, you're getting more than your money's worth
uh-huh. on
a subscription service. Just four comics a month, and it makes it worthwhile.
Me and Paul Tessner have talked about that, because he does that, and it's like right now I don't want to spend the extra money because I know and I told him, I'm like, I'm a collector. I want the actual issues. I don't want to just have access to a digital library. I want to own the issues. So it wouldn't, you know, for me, because I'm trying to save some money, it wouldn't make sense for me to add that on top of it. But it totally makes sense for the majority of people who just want to read this. Well, everyone that just wants to read this stuff, they don't necessarily need to own the issues.
Yeah,
that's right where I'm at. I mean, whether I'm that way about all comics at a given time, but I've always been that way with Marvel because of the existence of Marvel Unlimited. I just can't justify spending the money on the physical comics for Marvel when it's just so much cheaper to go with Unlimited, you know. I couldn't do it, you know.
It really is a great service. Like, it is, it's got me like thinking all kinds of different things, and I'm a collector too, so like I think what I'm doing lately is I'm starting to say, oh, I'm kind of interested in this. And if I say that word when I'm looking at previews, I'm kind of interested in this,
mm-hmm.
then I'll write it down on a piece of paper and I might not buy it. And I'll say, oh, I'm going to look at this when it comes on Marvel Unlimited. So
yeah.
Like, there's a lot of miniseries and stuff that I'm like, oh yeah, I think I want to read this, but I'll wait until I get to Marvel Unlimited instead of buying the print copy. So it's already influencing my Marvel purchases.
And, I mean, it might actually end up being that way for me too, Mike, because like right now I'm down to buying 18 titles. Not these are monthly titles. 18 Marvel titles a month. And you know, if I go you know, dip down a little bit lower, because I'm kind of like you in terms of, well, you're saying with doing it in Marvel Unlimited, I'm more, if I've been buying a series and now they're going to end it and start again, if I'm not excited about what the new direction is going to be, or if I've kind of been buying the title out of habit and now it's ending and relaunching, sometimes I'll take the opportunity to just stop buying that title. So if I go, you know, much lower than that, then even if I'm buying some physical copies, it still might be worth it for me to, what is it, like $7 a month or something like that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and depending then, on, there's, I mean, I just resubscribed. I let my subscription lapse for a little while, and then I just resubscribed for the year. They give you a code, right now the code Panther gives you a little bit of a discount, but it works out to, before tax, it's like $5 a month. Yeah, or no, I less mean, less than that.
Really?
Yeah, if you well, do I mean, a year, seriously. It's cheaper than if you go to a month. So,
If I drop two titles because I don't want them anymore,
it's your
and
it's
I get
your
unlimited instead,
yeah.
I'm already saving money.
You are.
Yeah.
And if you want to just keep, let's say if those two titles are something you just want to keep tabs on, you're not really enjoying them, but they're characters that you love, that it makes it worthwhile just to read it digitally so you know the history.
Well, that's the thing.
And then
yeah,
you can
so I'm going to have to start thinking about this a little bit more.
Yeah, it is like, with tax, it's probably a little bit over five. It's between $5 and $6 a month.
That's crazy cheap. That's too common.
You just have to, pay all at once, but.
Yeah, but still, I mean, what's the difference, you know? Then the rest of the month, I'm saving that money. I mean, the rest of the year, rather, I'm saving the money paid up front. Interesting. I'm going to have to start thinking about this a little bit more than I have.
Yeah, and then you get to read that, and then maybe purchase your paper in areas that don't have a feature like that.
Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, it seems like the only reason it would not be worth it is if you have no interest in Marvel Comics whatsoever, because even as a collector, like, you know, there might be stuff like, it's kind of like how Mike uses it, like stuff that you just want to check out, and you don't really want to necessarily pay for, but you just want to read it, and maybe out of curiosity, like you want to see when such and such a thing happened, or so and so's, or just the instantaneousness of it, that you can be listening to a podcast or something like that, and someone's talking about an issue, and you just want to go look at it real quick or something, just for the reference or something.
Well, you know, I posted last week that is, except for maybe five or six total issues, I haven't read any of the Fantastic Four run with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. I'm like, well, you know, I'm kind of waiting to see the Masterworks go on sale digitally, because a lot of times they'll go down to $3.99 or $4.99. But, you know, on the other hand, if I had Marvel Unlimited, I could probably read a lot of those. I don't know what they have available, but
quite a bit. Because Christmas,
if you want to read the original run, I'm 99.9% sure that every single issue of volume one of Fantastic Four is on there.
See,
like all that stuff. I remember you tweeting that. I remember seeing that, and you asking like Nick to let you know if those are on sale. And I'm like, I thought to myself, like, dude, just subscribe to Marvel.
Yeah. It's really the same engine. It's really the same experience.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
I would.
Do they have its own app, or do you go on a website?
It's its own app.
Oh, that's cool.
It's
you can
exactly
read that.
Like, it's exactly like the Marvel app that they have for the iPad or the other, except it's just got a Marvel Unlimited banner on it. And it has a browse section. You could browse by character. You could browse by creator. You could. They have like a new theme, like Black Panther Month might be this, and then they say, we suggest you read this, and it gives you like, you know, 10 comics to read, or it'll have like a creator spotlight and says, okay, this creator loves this character for this reason, and these are what you should read. It'll do like those two. It's pretty cool. And then every Monday, I think it's Monday, you can go and see what books they loaded, and it's pretty much all the new issues, plus they add a bunch of stuff. Like, they just added a bunch more She-Hulk, like Sensational She-Hulk.
See, that's another one where, like, I want to read all those. And maybe some, like, if I can find them, I'll probably eventually own them. But I'm not looking to go out of my way to spend lots of money on them. It's more like if I find something cheap, you know, in like a dollar bin or something, I'll pick them up. So that's another one where I'd like to read it, but I don't want to wait forever to have a full run.
Another thing they added recently, and I'm on a John Byrne kick lately, like I've been wanting to reread stuff that's John Byrne, and is they added something I hadn't read, which is the X-Men The Hidden Years by John Byrne. Which is like a continuation of, it's almost like the Claremont when he did the, what was it called? It was like a continuation if he never stopped writing X-Men. Yeah. This is what would have happened.
Yeah, I've got, I have a handful of those. I don't think I continued on it. Yeah, I'm just looking now. I have the first five issues.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's stuff. And every week there's something that I've never read, like on the old stuff. For me, Marvel Unlimited is more like for the older stuff than the new stuff. But, I always go on Monday and I see what did they load up, and it does influence where I go, what rabbit hole I go down.
Well, I'm looking. It looks like they, like you said, Chris. It looks like they have the entire run that I'm for Fantastic Four that I was kind of looking.
Yeah, most of. I mean, anything. I mean, you could argue whether they consider Fantastic Four a large property right now or not, but anything that's a large property, especially as they got like deeper into the MCU and the theaters and stuff, you'll see a correlation. Like when Doctor Strange was coming out, they started filling in some of the Doctor Strange comics, which there's still a lot that are missing, but any of the big properties like Avengers, X-Men, you know, Fantastic Four, and all the
Avengers,
individual Avengers like Captain America, Iron Man. Like, if they have a lot of movies about them and stuff, all that Volume One. Like, I mean, you could probably read most of the Marvel comics that came up prior to the change of the century.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you run into holes when you look for more obscure stuff and more obscure characters, but stuff like that has gotten added in, you know. I know in recent years they've added a lot more of the Power Man and Iron Man or Iron Fist stuff because of the Netflix shows and stuff.
So the Punisher too was really lacking, and they're starting to fill in like Warzone and a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. So like Mike said, they're still very actively adding stuff every week to the back catalog.
Wow. Yeah. I think you guys have both convinced me.
Well, it's well worth it. If you just say, I'm going to read four comics, and you just have that mentality, you're already making your money's worth, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And
right.
not only that, but as a collector, as myself, it has caused me to buy things that I never thought I would.
Right, like, but we're not going to...
I didn't think I was going to go down the Howard the Duck rabbit hole, but...
we're not going to share that information... Except for between the three of us.
Yeah, you'll never share that.
No.
Well, my wife knows. She hears every word I say. But...
Would it be a rabbit hole in that case, or would it be a duck hole?
A duck hole. He's such an interesting character, man.
Let me see here. Okay, so please make sure that my commission from Robert Kreiger's subscription is delivered to this, the following bank account. Well, sorry, I was just composing an email.
I was going to say, you guys should get some sort of a money back thing when you get other people to join.
Well, that's what makes it fascinating is I would love to know how many subscribers they have.
Yeah.
Because that is a lot. That's like a lot of freaking money that they're just cashing in on. And if they have like a growth chart, like if they're growing where Marvel's losing in print, that would be very interesting to see too. Like if they're getting more unlimited customers and they're decreasing the print, and you see like a trend over time, that would be fascinating as well. It would probably describe why they're relaunching so much, because the relaunch has the collector mentality as far as like people wanting to get multiple covers and speculation and rarity. Like the less print there is, the more you're catering to a speculator or collector, because it's doesn't have that much copies available. So, I mean, it's all pretty fascinating to me. But let's why don't we jump into a Chris comic or a Rob comic? Because we still got a question to go over too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, and we got to do our were we doing our top five gift things? Or
yeah,
no?
Yeah, that, that's the one.
Yeah, maybe we should jump into that because, based on how long it's taken us with the previous ones, who knows how much time we'll have left.
Okay, we can do that.
All right.
So this for episode 100, we had three sets of questions, and we spent all the time on one question. So on last episode, we covered the second one, and this is the third. And this is the top five gifts we received for a birthday, a Christmas, or any type of gift. Could be just a gift that you got. That's what the question is. So who wants to kick this off?
Well, I can start by saying one of my favorite gifts is just being able to do this podcast with you guys.
Oh, my God.
Just kidding.
That was.
Well,
that
I mean, I'm not kidding, but it's not on my list. I did all gifts that I got when I was a kid, since, you know, it's retro and stuff.
Yeah.
And my other caveat was originally, several weeks ago, where I jotted down some ideas for this, I had some video game stuff on that, namely Mario Brothers 3, which I already talked about getting, and the first two Nintendo and the Super Nintendo, and those were probably among the most significant gifts that I got. But since I talked about video games so much when we did the list of games, I decided to remove those and do non-video game stuff to make the list a little different. So mine aren't in any order. So I'll just pick a random one. And I kind of went with different properties that I was into when I was a kid. And the stuff that tended to be really exciting were the play sets, you know, and the vehicles and things like that, because those were like the bigger gifts. Those are the birthday, those are the Christmas, like, centerpiece gift, you know?
Yeah.
More so than the individual figures. So this first one's definitely a classic toy, which is the Castle Grayskull.
Ho, ho, ho!
Masters of the Universe. Yeah, that was a big one. I didn't have a... what was I going to say? No. But yeah, Fortress of Mystery and Power for He-Man and his foes. It sat on the outside of the playset, and it was really cool. Like this write-up I'm looking at, you know, it had a lot of unique things in it. Like there was a trap door that you could use when you turned the throne, and there's an elevator in it, the drawbridge door that went up and down, and you could lock into a place. And then there's the, you could put your one of your figures on the roof, and there was a laser cannon that they could be controlling. So, yeah.
What castle doesn't have a laser cannon?
Not only bad ones, basically.
Exactly.
Only crappy castles. But yeah, that was definitely the center. It lived up to its purpose as the centerpiece of my He-Man adventures.
Just out of curiosity, how many action figures did you have for this playset?
I'd have to look. I know I had quite a few Masters of the Universe. I know I had He-Man. I had the. Man at Arms.
Beastman.
I know I had Skeletor, Beastman. I know I had the dude that I had Battle Cat. Let me see. I know I had. What was the guy? You could push him down and he would spring back up.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
Ram Man?
Ram Man.
Is that his name? Yeah, Ram Man. I remember.
The little stout guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had like the battering ram head, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You'd push him down and his head would launch.
Yeah, he would.
What about Stinkor? Did you have Stinkor?
I don't think I had Stinkor.
No,
definitely a visual memory.
Did you have any females? Like, there was a couple of them.
What was her name? Tila?
Tila?
Yeah, Tila. I don't know if I had Tila.
So there was, like, no sexual playing, like, you couldn't do that.
I think I mostly had male figures.
Chris is a good boy.
I'm what?
I said, you're a good boy.
You're a good boy.
Yeah. I know that in his
Master
of the Universe play.
There could have been, like, sexy time between the men. I don't know if I knew. I don't know if I knew that that was a thing when
right.
I was a kid,
yeah.
To be honest. But, yeah,
you,
I think it might cover
all, you named all the popular ones that I know.
Yeah, I don't think I had She-Ra either. I definitely had Skeletor. Oh. I'm just kind of... Oh, I think I had Snout Spout.
Oh, the elephant
that's familiar
one?
Anyway. Yeah. I did want the Sorceress.
Evil Lynn.
And her
right?
figure. Yeah, Evil Lynn, I don't think... I might have had Tila. It's hard to tell what the character... Oh, I had Trapjaw.
Yeah, Trapjaw, sure.
Trapjaw, for sure.
How about Manny Faces?
Manny Faces.
Can you picture him? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I knew a guy named Manny Faces in college. No. No, I didn't think... I don't think I had him. I'm looking at a list of them with pictures because, like I said, I'm definitely a visual memory person. So
it seems like they're reissuing some of them. It looks interesting.
I saw that somewhere.
Yeah, I tweeted it because.
That's where I saw it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I don't have much nostalgia with He-Man. I don't really get into any He-Man stuff as an adult. I don't really care.
I kind of do because I've never had one, so I can't.
You were too old, Mike.
I was.
Yeah. I was at the tail end where I probably, out of all the Masters of the Universe toys in the household, I had a small handful, and basically like those first figures, you know, the He-Man, the Skeletor, the Merman, and Man-at-Arms, that first round. And then all the later rounds, and even including Castle Grayskull, my brother, who's 3 years younger than me, he had all those. So that was like his thing, was Master of the Universe. So that was one that we kind of played together, because that was like the tail end of me buying those types of toys, but he was still into it. So we had a lot of those, but a lot of them belonged to him.
All right, Rob, you want to go next?
Sure. You know, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to think of five, but the one that came to mind right away was for Christmas one year, and it had to be around the time of Empire Strikes Back, so like 80 or 81. I said, even if you know, I was begging my parents. I'm like, I want an AT-AT. And I'm like, if we buy you an AT-AT, you're not going to get any other. No, I still believed in Santa at that point. So they said, well, you're not going to get any other presents from us because the AT-AT is expensive. I said, that's fine. So sure enough, Christmas morning, and they bought me an AT-AT. And that was a huge deal for me. I mean, the thing is, you know, was enormous. And I think we talked about it a couple episodes ago, but I still actually own it. A lot of the pieces are like they had like clear plastic pieces that were the guns. I have no idea where those went. But I still have like the side door. I still have the cockpit door, you know, the thing that opens and closes for the cockpit. But some of the other stuff is missing, but I still have the AT-AT. That was a big one for me.
I don't have an AT-AT, but I'd like one. I have a, what is the smaller one called?
The Scout Walker?
The Scout Walker. I have
I think AT-ST or something like that.
Yeah, AT-ST. They have the new one that I'd love. It's huge. They don't have a toy for it yet. They have a model. They have a Lego. So I'm waiting to jump on that. I did post recently that they're coming out with one of the biggest Star Wars.
Yes, did you? I was just going to ask you guys if you saw that.
And I want it. It's the barge. The Jabba
the
Hutt
barge. Did you see this, Chris?
No.
It's the yeah, from Return of the Jedi, actual, like, Jabba's barge.
It is
but
so big.
It's like, it's probably like actual size of what it would be comparison to the figures.
Action figures, yeah.
What? How big is it? It's like 6 feet long or something like. I don't even remember.
Oh my god!
It is like the equivalent to the aircraft carrier that the GI Joe figures have.
Yes, yeah, but and it comes with a Jabba.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I bet it has the pit and everything.
Oh, it's got to have that.
Probably has everything. I don't
but
know.
You have
it looks big.
I read the article.
I don't know
article.
How they're
going to
sell
pre-order
it, but I kind of want it. I've been into a vehicle kick lately.
Mike, going to get it. You got to pre-order it. They're only making that certain number, and then that's it.
Where do you pre-order it from?
From that link that you, I think it was on Newsarama.
Oh, okay.
Find that. There's a link for it, and then you sign up, and they're only going to make it if they get a certain number of people saying that they want it, and then that's all that they're making.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, with something like that, that's kind of how they have to do it.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah. So that might be on my list in 20 years. I don't know. To myself. So I don't have either of the toys that you guys have mentioned. The AT-AT was on my list. I missed the He-Man boat entirely. But I'm going to go with the very first thing that I thought was collectible as my first one. And just like most of these gifts, with the exception of one, were Christmas gifts. We didn't get a lot of toys during the year, but we did circle our Sears and JCPenney catalog with things we wanted. And Santa Claus would come. Santa Claus was a big deal in our household. Like, I don't know how my parents did it because we weren't well-to-do, but they opened up these things back in the day called Christmas clubs. And what they were was it was like a savings account that you could save for, and you would earn interest on it as the year went on. And you put it in, like, January, and then by December it would earn so much interest. And I think that's how they paid for these things, because we had some good Christmases, even though we didn't have a lot of money. All the Santa wrapping paper was pure white. It was pure white. It was under the tree, and it would be written as, like, to Mike from Santa in black marker. And if you looked really carefully, you could see through the white paper. It was, like, wrapped maybe 20 times over, but you could, like, push it against the emblems and kind of see what you got, like what it was. So me and my brother would get up in the mornings and we'd go run under the tree and Santa's here. And it's actually how I found out that Santa was my parents one year, because I got up too early. And I was a kid and I was like in shock because Santa didn't come, and I was like, I knocked on the door and my mom was at the door, and she peeked through and she says, "You can't come in here." And I said, "But you don't understand. Santa hasn't come yet. He's always here by this time." And I didn't sleep on Christmas Eve. I didn't sleep. I was so anxious just to get up and play with toys. And I pushed the door open. My mom was blocking it. I pushed the door open, and there was my dad wrapping with the white paper. But I always kept it to myself. I never told my brother what was going on until he found out for himself. But I always kept it. But I was kind of like, I really believed. And this is, I think it was going on to being 7 years old.
Oh, that's too young.
7 or 8. It was around that time frame that I found out. But
I love that. I mean, one of the things that one of the characteristics that I always associate with you, Mike, is enthusiasm and excitement about things that you're into. And I kind of love that. It was you were so enthusiastic and excited about Christmas that you ruined it for yourself. Yeah,
I ruined it for myself, and it was never the same. After that, I knew there was always going to be something cool, but after that, it was like never, ever the same. Yeah. As far as anticipation, but yeah, it was. 1 year was a really good year, and it was my first collectibles. It was Big Jim's pack, and I actually got Big Jim, the Whip, Torpedo Fist, and I keep forgetting who the doctor was. It's like Dr. X. He's the bald guy with the steel hand, and I got the vehicles. I got the Corvette with the flip-over lasers. You'd actually do it. I got the camper, which you could actually put Big Jim's pack in it, and it had, what do they call the things that, one of those tow things where that you had the bike, the motorcycle, and the motorcycle was awesome because it had the shape of a wolf where the handlebars were. It was a thing that you put over the handlebars, and it was like a wolf for the pack, and it was awesome. And I still have them today, and they're still in so good shape. And each gym pack member, you could, like, flex the muscles. One of the things is they had, like, synthetic skin. It wasn't a plastic. It felt like a soft skin. And you can, like, flex their muscles, and the muscles would pop out. And, yeah, Big Jim's pack was one of my favorites. And I own it.
You love that, the soft skin of Big Jim's pack.
I do love the soft skin of Big Jim, especially. Torpedo Fist is awesome too.
I've read that on the internet.
Yeah.
Torpedo Fist supposed to be pretty good.
So that was one of my favorites. So Chris, it's your turn.
Was that me again? Well, here's a quick one, kind of, because I did mention this before, but one is the Mobile Command Center for G.I. Joe. If Castle Grayskull was my G.I. Joe, was my He-Man centerpiece, the Mobile Command Center was definitely the centerpiece for my, once I had it, for my G.I. Joe play sessions. It came out in 87, and I think I saw on this website, it retailed for $35 at the time. But yeah, it's pretty huge, and it was just super exciting to receive. I would say it's probably even more so than Castle Grayskull was exciting because it was a vehicle at the same time as a playset base, kind of, you know, in the way that it folded up and then unfolded. You know, when you unfolded it, it had three different levels, and has a satellite dish and little spots for free to put the Joes to little different weapons and guns and stuff, and you could roll up a small vehicle on the lower level and pretend that you were like working on the vehicle and maintaining it and stuff. So that was a huge one.
Nice.
They look cool. Like now that I look at G.I. Joes, it was like the thing that made them so unique is the play sets, and then the figures had multiple, like I don't think there's many figures that move as much as them. Even with the new Marvel figures, they had like those joints that you could pose them in so many different ways.
Yeah, I think G.I. Joe was probably my biggest. I think it was my biggest franchise when I was a kid, as far as toys go.
Mine was Star Wars and G.I. Star Wars number one, G.I. Joe 2. But those G.I. Joes, once you've had them for a while, though, would notoriously fall apart at the waist because it had the little black rubber band.
Yeah,
that attached the torso to basically the legs through the hip area, and I had many figures just degrade. Either, I mean, when I was younger, they would, every once in a while, if I was too rough, they would snap. But then, even if if they just sat around for a long period of time, that rubber band would just like disintegrate.
Yeah, I was super rough with my G.I. Joes. I mean, I remember my friend would come over and we'd play on our stairs, and we'd have G.I. Joes up and down the whole staircase to the second level of the house, and we'd throw them down from the top of the stairs, and they'd hit the bottom and break apart, and we'd take them outside on the dirt hills, and I definitely put them through the paces.
Yeah, that happens. I'll do another one. Another one that I remember, and I don't remember if I got it for my birthday or what the situation was, because I think I was pretty young at the time. But and I'm not sure either one of you. Know anything about Godzilla or the Godzilla toys?
Oh, that was a nice one. Yeah, I know. That's where the fire came out. The little thing in the in the mouth, and the fire would come out. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, yes. So this is an old, I don't know when it originally was, when it came out, but yeah, I got this huge, well, as a kid it was huge. It was what, maybe about 2 feet high.
Yeah.
Godzilla, and like Mike said, it has a little lever. Oh, yeah, Allie's saying hi to everyone. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Allie.
Everyone says hi, Allie.
What toys do you want to play with?
What? Mr. Mike wants to know what toys you like to play with. What toys?
I like Barbies.
Oh, nice.
Oh. Yeah, Barbies, right? Okay. All right, I'm going to finish talking, okay? That's Godzilla. Yeah, she knows Godzilla. So yeah, there was a lever on his on the back of his neck, and you'd pull it down, and like this thin strip of plastic fire would shoot out of his mouth. And the reason why I was asking you guys if you know, I've seen a couple of Godzilla movies, but for whatever reason, his right hand had a little button, or his right arm had
a
button where you press it. And his fist would launch. I'm not sure what that is, because I don't remember any movies where Godzilla's hand came out of its arm and flew. But
well, yeah. Do you remember Mega Godzilla, or the one, the robotic one? He did have a fist that would launch.
Oh, so it was only fair to give real Godzilla one.
I think it was just an accessory. like we got to do something cool kind of thing. You know, they walk in the room. We have this 2 foot toy. He's got fire come out of his mouth. We got to do something with his fist.
And you know what? Another little thing that really doesn't mean a lot, but I actually liked, is that because he was so big, his feet have little wheels underneath.
Yeah.
So if you're pushing him along, like, you know, your driveway or on a hardwood floor, you can just push him and he just wheels around instead of you actually picking him up and pretending that he's walking. So I actually liked that as a little thing too. And when I was a kid, and I got just a, I don't know when I got this, but I started picking up like just random different toys. I had Clash of the Titans toys. I had this Godzilla. I had the Masters of the Universe toys, just different toys. And I would create superhero and supervillains out of them. Like I would just decide that they were,
just
you know,
randomly
certain...
to play with other figures. You would,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in this thing that I made up, he was just like this huge like demon that was basically unstoppable. He was the toughest villain that any of the superheroes could fight. So it was a lot of fun. I actually still have this guy too. He's in the garage. I keep trying to remind myself to bring him in because
it's iconic. It's one toy that I would like to still own because I never owned it. My friends had it. It was amazing, and it was around the time that the Fantastic Four appeared in the Godzilla comic book, and I was like amazed. Mm-hmm. I was amazed by this toy because I wanted to play with the Mego doll so bad with this Godzilla toy.
Yeah, though I had one of the Godzilla comics from Marvel is probably one of my first like 10 comic books I ever bought. I remember the cover very vividly in my head.
Yeah, that's cool. This is a toy that I will buy if it does show up in good shape at some point in time, because it was one that I've always wanted. Just like the AT-AT, you're picking specific things that have foiled me, like for whatever reason I could never get, but I want it.
You're not going to go on eBay after this. This call.
No, no, no. I'll probably buy them eventually.
He doesn't wait till after he does it well.
Yeah, he's already done it.
I'm on the show.
All right.
Is it my turn or is it?
I think so.
My turn. Okay, yeah. So for me, the next, and these are like in chronological Santa Claus years, but Mego came out with the superhero dolls, and Mego did a lot, like. They did dolls for everything. We're talking Captain and Tennille, Happy Days, Kiss, Diana Ross, Farrah Fawcett, Wonder Woman. They did dolls for everything. That was their thing. But the ones that I focused on were the world's greatest superheroes that ran from 1972 to 1983. And one Christmas I got, I couldn't circle it in the Sears catalog. I couldn't circle it in the JCPenney catalog, but I circled it in a Heroes World comic book catalog. And Santa Claus had to mail order for these ones because there's no Heroes Order store available. So some of the things that I got that year was the Spidey car, and it was pretty freaking amazing because it had a web base contraption on the back, and you'd hit a button in the car and you could trap other Mego characters in the spider web. That year I got a lot of obscure characters. I got Green Arrow, I got the Falcon, I got Captain America, I got Thor, stuff that you couldn't buy at the time at Kmart. there were characters that I really liked. I got the Human Torch, Mr. Fantastic. I even broke Mr. Fantastic's arms just so I could stretch him. So I would make the cloth like stretch, and I'd make the sound. I broke both his legs at the knee joints and both of his arms at the elbow, so I could just stretch him out. The Incredible Hulk I did get too. I had an older version that I bought at Kmart, but I trashed him, and this was like a new version that I wanted. But yeah, I got the Arrow car, which was a car for Green Arrow, which shot a dart out of the front end of the car. So, and I still have these, and they're in really good shape, except for like the belts, or if there are any stickers involved, they're pretty much gone. So that was mine. I really enjoyed those. And it's hard for me not to look at the back of previews and buy the retro Magos because they come up with the Teen Titans and like characters that I never could have. And the only ones that they had at Teen Titans back in the 70s were like Kid Flash, Aqualad, Wonder Girl, and Robin, obviously. And I think that was it. Oh, Speedy. They had Speedy, too. And I never owned them. I never owned those dolls. And they're retro doing the Teen Titans. And it's, like, really hard not to, like, pull the
I mean, I got to tell you, Mike, you know, we're only, like 3 years difference. But that's, unfortunately for me, that was enough of a difference that I had only maybe two or three of those.
Yeah.
And I loved them. I mean, they were just the best. And I've always been a big fan, whether it was the comic books or any other type of media, for the obscure characters, because I always wanted to learn more about, like, characters I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
And they released so many more obscure characters. Like you said, like, you know, especially as a little kid, like the Speedy and some of the other, like the Teen Titans and stuff that I may not have been familiar with as a kid. And I mean, I wish, if there's one thing that I wish that I had, it would have been a lot more of those. 'Cause the few that I had, I would have been, you know, I would have been kind of young, and I mean, I don't own any of them anymore. And I'm sure that they were got destroyed. The ones that I had back in the day.
Yeah. I love these figures. It's from a retro perspective, and even from now, they look so cool to me, because it just brings me, I played with these things for hours, man. I mean, I had so many freaking adventures, and there's so many I wanted, like the Teen Titans. When they came in, like, I didn't see them in the catalog, but I flipped over the box, and you know how sometimes the box would show some of the characters?
Yeah.
I'm saying, they have Kid Flash? And Speedy? I was like, I don't have Speedy, and I need him for my Green Arrow. So I was like, it was a really cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
These are great figures. And they were at my prime as being a kid, too. Like, when I would love to play with these things. But they had, like, the Planet of the Apes toys. And
they had everything. They had Star Trek. I remember
Conan.
Star Trek.
Yeah, the Star Trek dolls. I have Scotty. He's the only original Trek doll I have, but
I was friends with a kid back when I was my dad and his dad worked together. So I remember he had the Star Trek playset of the Enterprise,
and that's awesome. You
know, the vinyl plastic.
Yeah.
I remember playing with
I've
that.
I've seen
and
played
house.
With many of these toys, but I didn't always own them. Somebody in my neighborhood did. The one doll I still want to get is, they came out with the Linda Carter Wonder Woman line, and I really would like to get a Linda Carter Wonder Woman 1977.
Sounds like you have some searching to do.
Yeah.
Some All toy right, shopping, yes. At least. Okay. Next one we'll do is something a little different. The Alvin and the Chipmunks Curtain Call Theater playset. And I know for a fact that there is a picture of me holding the box for this, smiling. I think it would be Christmas. Probably Christmas, not birthday. But it was... I had a bunch of Alvin and the Chipmunk action figures.
Did you have the albums?
I had albums, yep.
Yep.
Christmas and different ones, and they were definitely records. But yeah, the Curtain Call Theater, it's just that. I mean, it came in like a upright rectangle shape brown box, and you fold open the front of it to two big doors, and it's a theater where the Chipmunks put on plays and stuff like that. And it had different pieces that you could use to do different themes, like Final Frontier. Like, you'd put like a different backdrop on the stage so that it had a background that went through with the theme, and then it had different it had like space helmets for each of the three chipmunks. there was a Western one, and it gave you Western hats and dungarees to put on the chipmunks. There was a pirate one, and then just for the regular chipmunks, like music performances, it came with some microphones and a drum for Theodore, and so it came with a lot of stuff. It like had a curtain that you could wind up and put down. It had like a trap door that you could pull, you know, like back in the vaudeville days, like so that, you know, you could have somebody like fall down the trap door from the stage. So it was really, really cool. Definitely like one of my first big play sets.
Is this a picture we can, is it accessible? The picture with you with it?
You know, I think it's just a photograph still, like,
You could take a picture of a picture, you know that, right?
Yeah, or scan it. Scan it in, man. Scan it.
I'd like to see this.
I'll have to check at my parents' house.
I love going through my parents' photo albums. Like,
yeah,
trying to find old stuff almost brings
like a tear to my eye because it's just like I remember everything so vividly, and just to have pictures of that when I was a kid.
I know,
it's pretty awesome.
Time goes very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it does.
All right, so. Another one that I can think of is, and Chris, you might remember this if you were a G.I. Joe fan, but I think my aunt and uncle got this for me when I was a kid one Christmas, or probably was birthday. It was the G.I. Joe hovercraft.
Mm.
You familiar at all?
Sounds familiar.
I'm looking at it online. I didn't remember that this is what it was called, but it was called the Killer Whale, and I guess WHALE stood for something, but what, I'm not sure. you know what? Hang on. I'll put this in our Skype chat. Let me see if I can attach a picture.
Oh, I think I just brought it up.
Yeah, I saw it on the Googles.
Okay, you see it?
Yeah.
Okay. So this thing was pretty large. This was no aircraft carrier by any means, but it was a decent size hovercraft. It was probably about 2 feet long and maybe about 10 inches wide. And that was one that I totally didn't expect from like an aunt and uncle, and. It was cool because it actually floated and stuff like that. But I mean, it had some heft to it. You could fit a lot of guys in there. There was the transport opening underneath where like you could store a ton of figures if you wanted to. But
I love that in toys for some reason. Like I loved compartments that you could put stuff in. I don't know why.
Yeah, this was a big one, and I specifically remember it because of that. It also probably was one of the last toys that I probably got from G.I. Joe. I kind of feel like this was towards the end of me collecting G.I. Joe toys.
Yeah, I think my friend had this.
Who was the figure in the right-hand corner? I can't make him out.
The
hovercraft, do you know?
Let me see if I can find another picture that shows it.
It comes with, I got it up on yojo.com. It comes with Cutter.
Oh, Cutter.
Okay. I couldn't make out the character.
Yeah, he's got that orange vest.
Orange vest, blue hat. And I got here what whale stands for. It's warrior, : hovering assault launching envoy.
They're reaching. I think they're reaching.
Yeah, just a little bit. But yeah. I love ridiculous acronyms like that, though.
I know. I actually, for the first time in forever, I started buying the G.I. Joe comics again, the Real American Hero ones. With they just like launched like a female Snake Eyes, a couple months ago. Yeah, I hadn't been buying them before, but I did get a just digitally. I got like the first trade of when Larry Hama came back with IDW.
Yeah.
So I haven't read it yet. Yeah, I bought that.
I never left them when they came back. Like
wow, you.
Well, since IDW relaunched it.
Dropped it around
in between
issue
there,
80.
There was like Devil's Due and Image, and I don't own those. But my brother had given me his collection of G.I. Joe, and since then I bought all the IDWs. And to tell you the truth, like, there's some really, really good, like, Christos Gage and Mike Costa stuff that are more serious. Mm-hmm. But god dang, those Larry Hama ones are fun. I mean, well, it has like a retro feel to it. Like
they do, and it's like huge continuity too, which is insane.
They're so convoluted. The stories, just like I'm saying, they're just so.
Yes, they are.
They fall into what I was talking about, like many plot lines.
I bought a lot of I bought them in Marvel up to like issue 80 or something like that, and I think they went much longer than that. But then after that, I would like you said, I'd pick up the Devil's Due. I think Image carried it for a little bit, and pick up a couple of those. But invariably, I would just drop off of them. So when they relaunched with this, I didn't bother. But now I'm gonna go back and probably just read them in trades. Just assuming I enjoy it all the way through.
Cool.
But yeah, so that's what I got.
Well, so it's my turn again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with the Star Wars Death Star.
Mm.
I still own this in really, really, really good shape.
Wow.
Some of the key features, my favorite key feature on this is the garbage pack disposal that comes with the
character
with the one eye inside of that. And it comes with like styrofoam, styrofoam, like little garbage pieces.
Yeah.
And you stick in the compactor and you can turn the compactor so that it really does compact your characters. There's a couple of trap doors on it. There's a huge laser cannon at the top, and it has you can explode that cannon. And then it comes with a sliding, you know where Luke slides across with Leia?
Mm-hmm.
It comes with that little contraption, but it's a really nice piece. It does have some cardboard slide-ins, so it looks like the Death Star in sort of like a circular. It is like a, I would say it's like 1/8 of a circle, or maybe less, 1/16 of a circle.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of try to make it like a sphere, but it's not quite a sphere, not even close. But it's a pretty cool piece, and I really like it.
Mike, I had gotten that. Back when it came out. Mm-hmm. Give you guys one, well, and Chris, I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but I'll give you one guess. I have exactly one piece still from that entire, one item from that entire set. I don't know what happened to the rest of it, but what's the one item I have?
The gun.
Uh-uh.
Trash compactor.
The trash compactor monster.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, that's it. I have the green monster, and that's it. I don't know what happened to the rest of it.
I was surprised I still have every single piece of garbage that goes into the trash compactor.
How? Those are the little foam pieces.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, the foam pieces.
I probably didn't have every piece of it 2 days after getting the Death Star.
When Star Wars came out, I was pretty anal. Like, I played with them, but I put them all in their little compartments, and
yeah,
I didn't play mean with my toys like my brother.
Mike was just born a collector.
Yeah, yeah. I hate to say it, but when we would, like I said, I mishmashed toys to create superhero and supervillain teams, and at some point I had a BB gun and I actually would try to shoot the some of them. I would be the supervillain and I'd be shooting them with a BB gun from like
that,
10 or
that,
15
that was my away. That was my brother, because he had cool toys. He had those Clash of the Titans, and I'm talking about Perseus, the
Perseus
had the winged Pegasus.
Yeah,
And
no, that
he
was.
had the he had the villain, the one that was also Zeus's son that turned into that like dragon. I can't remember his
Celebes.
name. Yeah.
Celebes. Yep, I had all of them. Well, they only came with four figures. It
But it
was
did they did he we never had the big the monster, the what was
the Kraken.
the
Yeah, I had
Kraken,
the.
yeah. You
The
were
more
you
we talk, I
you were
told you this
you
last
were
time.
using Go you were using Godzilla as the Kraken.
I had the Kraken too.
Oh, you
I'm
had the
telling.
Kraken?
Yes, the more we talk, the past three episodes, the more I realize how spoiled I was as a child. Because I mean, my parents just bought all this stuff. I had the Kraken, I had the four characters, and I had the Pegasus. The Pegasus was cheap. It didn't nothing moved on the Pegasus at all.
Yeah.
It was just a static horse that you would insert the wings on each
They
side.
weren't the greatest toys, but they were cool. Like
Yeah.
it is Clash of the Titans was big for me. Like
Me too.
because it was something that I experienced on film, that was sort of like Sinbad in the Eye of the Tiger. Because when I saw Sinbad in the Eye of the Tiger, I was like, "Oh, this shit, this is awesome!" Ray
Right.
Harryhausen or whatever with his figures.
Yeah.
Oh
And
my God, I loved Sinbad. Like if you had the
you would have
seven toys
experienced
of
those on
Sinbad,
TV.
and then Clash of the Titans came out, and it reminded me so much of being like really young, going to the Sinbad movies, and I
Yeah.
was like, "Yeah, this is it."
It was, I totally agree. I don't remember if we saw, we had to have seen it in the theater if I was buying all those toys. But that was a staple once it came out on HBO and stuff like that. We would watch nonstop.
And people give me shit how much I love Dragon Slayer, but it came out around the same time as Clash of the Titans, and I
Yeah.
love Dragon Slayer.
What about Beastmaster? Do you remember
I
Beastmaster?
love Beastmaster too.
Yes,
That was Mark Singer. He
it
was the
was.
Beastmaster.
Yes.
He had those
It's
little
weasels.
ferrets.
Yeah,
Those little
ferrets. That's
ferrets.
right. Yeah.
And then there was that owl, that little owl.
Ooh, Bobo.
Bobo, yeah, on Clash of the Titans.
Oh, too funny. One of these days when still probably about 3 years off, that when the kids get to be a little bit older, we'll be showing them Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, much better than the remake, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't see the remake. I'm like, come on.
All
How can
right,
you
so Chris,
improve in a
you're
classic?
on number four, and I'm glad you had us do this before we got into other stuff because it's
Yeah, I mean,
you knew
we have 2 episodes prior of evidence.
experience.
Yeah. All right, well, I had to include some kind of Lego after I thought about it. And I was definitely really pretty into Lego, and I had a lot of Legos. I know I liked this was back in the 80s. Lego didn't have a lot of the licenses that they have today, and they mostly just had like their own creations. I mean, they had different subsets and themes, but they were mostly stuff they came up with themselves. And one of those was Castle, which was really just kind of like fantasy or like medieval kind of. And one of the bigger sets that I know that I got was called was it seems to have been called the Camouflaged Outpost. And it's a foresterman. It's like a sub theme of the castle set, a foresterman, where you'd have the minifigures were all kind of your Robin Hood style. They have the hat with the feather and the bow and arrow on their back. But speaking of toys with compartments and stuff, there was I mean, that was kind of what this whole thing was about. Here's a description from the Lego Wikipedia or Lego Wiki. The hideout consists of a tree and a large rock that are both hollow and built on separate base plates and interconnected with hinge bricks to fold the structure open. The hollow rock has a large overgrown cover plate at the front that can be folded up for easier access to the interior. Another entrance is covered by a black rock on its side that is mounted on a Technic pin, allowing it to swivel back and forth to either open or close the passage. On the first floor, in front of the tree, is an observation platform with crenellations. The interior of the hideout is empty. So, I mean, not only did you get to build it, it was 211 pieces. Once you built it, it was really cool because, like I said, it hinged in the center so you could open and close it. And then on the front, it had this piece that you could lift up and put stuff in there and close it. And just a lot of, like, moving pieces once it was actually constructed.
That's impressive. I'm looking mm-hmm. at the picture now. Because they had, like, little mini sets that could go along with this stuff, but I guess mm-hmm. they didn't get to the actual castle until later. So you built this? You built this thing out? This whole thing?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that was the thing I loved about Legos, is I loved following the instructions. You know, and I'm sure, I don't know at what point this was in my Lego career, but you know, I know I transitioned from early on having a lot of help from my dad to doing more and more of it on myself as time went on over the years that I was into Lego. But and I my memory's not good enough to remember specifically with this one, but I know I loved following the step-by-step instructions and putting the stuff together. But this one definitely was also a lot of fun to play with once it was together. So this might have been the biggest Lego set that I got. I'm not positive, but when I was kind of browsing retro Legos, this one came back to me as one I had.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah, Legos. I'm discovering huge. Legos. I guess when I had Legos, they were all just random pieces that you'd build your own shit with. They were never kits where you would follow some instructions. But
right.
I'm almost 50 and I'm enjoying putting those together with my niece. So
yeah,
oh, absolutely.
I still like it.
Mm-hmm. I'm like having absolutely. a blast putting the worlds together.
My son is like, and he blows my mind because they're 3 days shy of 5 years old at this point. And he, even at four and a half, like, you can get him a not too complicated Lego set. Like, I got him the land speeder for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I mean, the first time he needs help. And then after that, he just builds it by himself, looking at the instructions.
Wow.
He loves it. He's all about Legos. It's just absolutely incredible to watch him. He could just sit there for an hour and just build
so
Legos.
So many different options too.
Yeah.
To do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially. I'm glad they're still around and still popular, and kids are still getting into them. I mean,
yeah.
Like you said,
I think they're more popular than they've been, you know, ever too, because of those all the licenses now. So no matter what you're interested in.
You
have the opportunity, you know?
Yeah, I think that's helped keep them alive, and like making the video games and stuff to cross over with that. And they've kind of adapted.
Yeah.
The licenses have been helpful because there were definitely no like Star Wars, no superhero, like any of that stuff. But
they just ran like a regular space. I had a lot of the generic space Legos, and I mean, I had a ball with them. Made up my own, like,
yeah,
story.
Yeah, I liked the space ones a lot. I don't think any had like any real big space ones, but I had a lot of like small spaceships.
Small.
And I loved the space minifigures with, they just had that simple helmet.
Yes.
And the little jetpack.
Yeah.
And I love those.
Oh yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, Legos are cool.
All right, Rob, you're up.
All right, I only have one more that I can think of, and this wasn't a big one by any means, but it was very influential. We had gotten I mean, maybe I should say the Atari in general, but I don't think that was a gift for anything. I think my dad just got the family the Atari. So, the one that I'm thinking of though is Space Invaders when it came out for the Atari 2600, because in my mind that was the first one that I can remember that it was an actual video arcade game that they came out with the a version that you could play at home. And as simple of a game as it was, when I was a little kid, it just blew my mind that like we could actually, I don't have to pay a quarter to play Space Invaders, we can actually get them. And I begged my, I begged my parents, can we get Space Invaders? Can we get finally, I might have been for my birthday, they got Space Invaders for me.
It's
And
funny you
it's like,
still say that because I still play that now.
it well, but it's
I play it on my iPad all the time.
because it's so straightforward. Like you don't have to sit there and think. You could just sit there and play. And it was just, and like I said, I mean, it was the first one that I can remember that's like, there's, you can go to an arcade and play it, but now all of a sudden I have it at home. It just blew my mind.
That's
Absolutely
cool.
loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, I still play it on my iPad sometimes before bed. Space
Yeah.
Invaders.
Does
It's
it
such
make
a
you sleep?
simple thing, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Let's see, I'm on four, so I got the Millennium Falcon. So I own two of them now. I own one that was the original, and I own one that's more from when they relaunched the franchise. But I didn't open up the second one. The second one, I thought it was lost. So I thought this vehicle was lost, but we found it in the attic of my parents' garage, the detached garage. So my dad must have took it up there when he built the new garage, and I thought it was missing, because I had we had like a side storage unit, and they tore that down, and it I didn't get a call saying, "Here's your ship." So I found it originally. The only thing that's missing from it is the stickers. But other than that, it's in really, really good shape. And the key features of this is it has the trap door, which I know you guys like, where it has a compartment where they could hide. So like if the stormtroopers are boarding the ship, the figures could hide underneath, and like you could put Han Solo underneath the floor panel, put the floor panel in so they could walk right past. It has
Yeah.
the video game or the game that they played, like the chess type piece game with the monsters that they were playing, that Chewbacca was playing with C-3PO.
Yeah,
They
it's
have
not
that
wise to upset
piece.
a Wookiee.
Yeah, they have the big thing is the cockpit, which you could put two figures in, and then the gun, which you put your figure in kind of like upside down, and you can kind of turn the gun and it clicks. It goes click 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 click. And it does have a sound that it used to make, but that doesn't work anymore. Even though I was real good, because my dad used to always say, "Always take the batteries out of your toys, because you don't know when you'll play with them again, and you'll ruin them because they'll turn into acid and they'll burst." Even though I was real good at that, I still don't get the electronics to work on my Millennium Falcon. I should probably fix it, but that is my fourth pick. So we're up to. Go ahead.
I just wanted to share too that like I think we when did we talk about we talked about this. Oh, maybe just I don't remember. But yeah, I've got my Millennium Falcon too, but I think I was telling you like almost every piece is missing except for the I mean the cockpit is fine and then the large cover for the main part of the ship. That's
Yeah,
it. Everything else I have is gone.
That's the piece that I forgot to mention. There was like a cover, so you can make the ship like intact, or you could take off that top cover, and then you get like what would you say, 3/4 of the inside of the ship, and that's where you can
Yeah.
put your toys in and play with it. And
Yeah.
it also has like a boarding thing, like a ramp that drop down
Yes.
that you could have the figures walk up and down the ship. So that was another feature that the Millennium Falcon had.
It was a great toy.
Yeah.
It was almost, I mean, it was a spaceship and a playset, really.
Yes. best looking ship in my opinion. It's my favorite mm-hmm. ship. It's my favorite ship. Like when I get goosebumps when I see the Millennium Falcon, and I don't get as many goosebumps anymore because of I'm becoming desensitized. Because
yes,
movies are coming out like every day now. And yeah. Go see Game Night, Rob. By the way,
I heard it was somebody else saw it and said it was very funny.
No, but it falls into the genre that I think you'll dig too. Cause it's
oh,
like,
really? Okay,
yeah, it's kind of interesting.
All right.
Yeah, it was very, very good. But yeah, that was my pick, the Millennium Falcon. Number 5 coming up for Chris.
My last one. Again, these are in no order, but it worked out well because it ties in pretty well with yours. And it's something that I mentioned to Evan before on the show is the Darth Vader collector case.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't, you know, timing wise, my age and stuff, I was definitely into Star Wars as a kid. But it was probably the first franchise of those sorts of things that I was into. And I did end up moving on to G.I. Joe mostly after a few years at the most, just because of, you know, when Return of the Jedi came out, I was 4, I think, 4 or 5. So I was still pretty young. But yeah, so I didn't really have any playsets or something, but I did have a lot of figures. And I did have the Darth Vader collector case to put them in. I think this came out originally early on. You could get it, but then it was released in stores after a few years. And so, yeah, it's just there was a C-3PO one, too. I'm sure most people listening to this know what it was, but it's Darth Vader's bust, basically, his head and his shoulders. And it opened up, and it had compartments. You could fit 31 figures in there. And I think it was basically fit most of the figures that were out at the time that it was released, because it actually came with stickers. I think there were stickers that you put on as opposed to already being on there that like, with the name of the figure that was behind it. But and they had, you know, it was specialized so that not all the figures were the same size. So there's some character like Chewbacca that was a little bit bigger, and then R2-D2 was smaller. So it was kind of set up to accommodate the different sizes of the character. Yeah, it was. They were stickers. I'm looking at it right up on the.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah.
I never had that one, but I had like a little vinyl carrying case. That
I,
yeah, same
I
thing.
Had, I put, had the vinyl one too.
Yeah, so you had to put your stickers on, like just like you were saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember the stickers. I don't remember the stickers for the figures though.
Yeah. Yeah, you just label the individual compartments. So
yeah,
say okay, this is where I'm going to put R2-D2. This is where I'm going to put so and so.
I remember not wanting the Darth Vader or the C-3PO because they're shaping. You have to put the figure like the smaller figures in the corners.
Yeah.
And then the bigger figures towards the center. And that's why I chose the vinyl is because all the compartments were the same. And I can move them around because the vinyl had two contraptions. They were stackable trays, right?
Yeah.
You lift one stackable tray, and there was another set of stackable trays.
Well, I think that part of
equal, so that I knew I could move my figures around and organize them in any way I wanted. Like you would have to get. I remember, like I only had a few small figures. There was like R2-D2. There was that the snaggletooth guy from the cantina.
The red outfit, the Jawa.
Yep. Yeah. And I can't, there was another robot. I don't know his name, but he was white and red.
R5-D4.
R5-D4. Yeah.
I think that was the first carrying case because I think that just like Chris is saying, I think that that vinyl one didn't hold as many as what Chris is saying, but it held everything from that, you know, the first full series of the first movie, you know, including like the sand people and stuff like that. So I think that's the only thing that it would, anything more than that, I don't think it would hold.
Yeah, I'm on StarWars.com, an article that talks about all these different ones, and it's called the Mini Action Figure Collector's Case, and holds 24 figures.
The one that we're talking about?
Maybe. It says it was the first one.
It's just a rectangular case?
Yeah.
With a scene on it? Yeah, that's
But then there were some minifigure collector cases. I mean, there was a lot of different ones.
Yeah.
The C-3PO one actually held more. It held 40 figures. Wow. It was released at the same time as the Darth Vader one in stores. But like I said, the Darth Vader one had been had come out several years earlier originally. And then was re-released. But yeah, I mean, it was the only thing I had that was big besides the various and then I just had a bunch of figures. So it was cool.
Yeah, that's cool. So this Darth Vader one, it had, you put the stickers along the front. They had like little, like, I don't know what you call it, but little pieces to hold the figures in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, the carrying cases that we had were just, like Mike said, there was two stacks, but there was nothing to hold the figure. And if you turned it upside down, then they might get a little loose depending on how much you shook it. But
no, they wouldn't get loose because they were pretty tight. Remember, there were the two trays?
Yeah, and yeah, I mean the top tray, I guess, could have.
I don't think they could escape the tray. Now, that's not saying for the guns and stuff that you put in with them.
Yeah, that's true.
Wouldn't escape the tray. Those would escape if you flipped it upside down, but the figures didn't usually flip. But I know which ones they're. Those other cases, they had like little braces that you'd put like when you close
it. Yeah, like a little bar. Yeah.
It was like a roller coaster bar.
Yes, yes.
Keep them from falling out.
I like that. They look cool. It looks cool.
Yeah. So my last one, because you said you didn't have one, right?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head, yeah.
My last one was a gift I got from Barb, and this was in the college years. Mm. So Barb knew I loved Valiant. Like, they came out when I was in college in the 90s, and I was buying everything, but I didn't jump on like right away, and I had to fill in stuff. And this is when Wizard was saying Valiant was hot, like it was hot, and these books were through the roof, and they weren't there weren't like a lot of them available at the time. And she bought me the first appearance of Turok that appeared in Magnus the Robot Fighter number 12 in Valiant. And at that time, that book was over $100. It was an expensive book. I think now it's like $25 or $23 or something like that. But it was an awesome gift to get, because I think that was the only one at the time that I was missing. I had worked my way through getting everything, because my first Valiant comic was like Archer and Armstrong number 0, and I had missed. It started like right when Unity started is when I started. Mm-hmm. And I had to go back and get all of Magnus Robot Fighter and Solar. So, it was awesome gift. And I still, every time I go through my boxes, I still think of that gift.
That's awesome.
Yep. So I think finished our question. Is there anything you guys want to talk about left?
I don't think so. I think I'm good.
Okay. Then we'll wrap this one up. And you've been listening to Geek Brunch Retrocast. And you can reach us on the Twitters @RobKrieger, like Seeger. at MythMaking ETC and at Mike Myers Brunch, and we're located at geekbrunchpodcast.com. Also, you can search for us on Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast and click the like button and follow all the episode threads. And I think that's about it.
I think so too.
All right.
Thank you guys.
Sunday.
Yes.
And I want to search out this Godzilla now.
Good hunting.
Yeah. All right. See
ya. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.